Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt, and it's been a while, but alongside me, the man, the myth, the legend, Jack Piatelli. Jack, how are we doing?
Doing really well. Excited. College season is going to start up pretty soon. On February 5th, some of the scrimmages and games starting February 12th.
Yep.
Division 1 and 2, 3. Players, athletes from a number of different New England colleges are going back to school this week and next and jumping right into the season.
I can't believe it's basically here already, even though I've been writing about it for weeks and full anticipation, getting ready for it. This is our Division 3 section of our recruiting series, and coming into the studio today is Babson's Rocky Batty.
He's done a great job at Babson. This is his fourth season, but he's going to bring a different perspective in recruiting because he was at Wellesley High School for 15 years where he was leading the way for a lot of his players to find the right fit in terms of college, academic and athletic, good fits for them, and he spent a year at BU as a volunteer assistant. Now he's at Babson where the academics are very high, but we were looking at their schedule. They've got a very, very good schedule this season.
This might be the best schedule I've ever seen a NUMAC school play. And we know because our schools are in the NUMAC with Babson. I grew up playing and hating Babson so much. So this is going to be an interesting interview, but let's get right to it. Babson, men's lacrosse head coach, Rocky Batty. I'd like to welcome in studio Babson men's head lacrosse coach, Rocky Batty. How we doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good. We're doing a little D3 life, very connected to both Jack and I, just in terms of your school, because
sure.
I don't know if people listening to this know this. Jack Piatelli went to Springfield, which he announced before we started recording. It's probably the funniest thing that has ever happened at the studio.
I forgot that you guys actually remembered that I went to Springfield College. Let's get back to Rocky.
I got no humor on that one.
No. It's great.
Well, you went to Clark. I went to Springfield. Rocky went to Brown. So he's at a much different
level
than we are.
Than both of us put together times five.
I'd argue smart across the board on that one.
Well, smart wins. This is part of our recruiting series. And we wanted to bring you in because I personally, like, we know Babson pretty well, considering our backgrounds, but also, like, where Babson is now in the recruiting picture in Massachusetts is very unique because you pull in a ton of business school applicants. And, yeah. You know, what is that, like, a big part of your recruiting process? Or is there, obviously, the kid has to be good at lacrosse, but how does that kind of start for you?
Well, the degree you get at Babson is a business degree. So it's not just a big part. It's not just a huge part. You are coming to study business in all the different forms that might take when you decide to come to Babson, right? I mean, I don't have to ask somebody, are you interested in studying Shakespeare? If they are.
They go to Clark.
We're done with them. They're done with us. They go to Clark. You know, my mom's a Shakespeare teacher, so I
awesome.
I would get deep into that conversation with whoever that is. Yeah. But I would also say we're done with recruiting.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that makes that part pretty straightforward for us.
What do you pull other majors at all? Like, what are some of your other guys doing on the roster?
Well, you know, I mean, someone might choose to they know that they want to be an entrepreneur. They know that they want to get into business law. They know that they want to be in real estate investment. They know they want to be on Wall Street. So, yeah, we're a business degree, and that's what someone knows they're applying for, they're looking forward to, and they're going to get hands-on experience in the classroom and in the field, and by that I mean their professional field, while they're with us.
When I was growing up, high school, college, Babson was known for running the best summer lacrosse
Amen.
League there was.
The Gataway.
It was awesome. You know, they had over 100 teams playing that summer league. It was one of the best experiences I had as a player. And, you know, you played in it, and so many players that we know played in it. But it wasn't known for its lacrosse program. It was always known, you know, as a great academic school. And this is your fourth year. Getting into this position at Babson, how did you know what kind of player you were looking for to get it to where you've gotten it very quickly in the last 4 years?
Great question. I would say that, first of all, I'd argue that the class of, the guys in the late 70s, early 80s who played at Babson, who were, 18-0 and first team and also last team before last year to go to the NCAA tournament, they'd argue they should have been known for lacrosse. They were beating some of the big boys and playing some great ball. Beside the point, though. I think that what I knew at Babson was, just like so many New England schools, we've got a great tradition of academics, so we should be able to appeal to really high-end students, really driven students. At the same time, when I looked at the fact that Babson was building a $60 million facility for athletes, and when I looked at the success of our hockey team, of our soccer teams, of our baseball and softball teams, of our field hockey team, and frankly, the success of our lacrosse team. You know, a goal away this year, a goal away another year, a goal away another year. Great games with among others in our conference, with Springfield, right? Babson's always right on the cusp. And, I knew that it was going to be a great opportunity. In the end, the kids that I look at, that we look at, I think they're the same that really anybody who's coaching high-level lacrosse looks at. Terrific athletes, guys who can think for themselves, guys who want to be at school.
Do you find that the players that are highly academic motivated are also as motivated as athletes?
Yes. Yeah, I think that they are. You answer that one for me. You've got two highly motivated boys in your house. I can't speak for your daughter. I followed their careers more than hers. Anytime I saw them play, those are some highly motivated athletes right there. And I think they represent, not just Ivy League, but kids who go to NESCAC, kids who go to WNL and FNM, kids who go to, and, I'm going to leave every school off the list if I make it any longer, kids who go to great schools who want to play sports. In all likelihood, they sharpened the iron for a lot of years before they had an opportunity to even get recruited.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's interesting is obviously you're known for being a beacon of the business school, is what you shoot up every year, every time you're out there. And it's not just Massachusetts. I think before you got there in particular, and before they built that facility, it was very much, this is the Massachusetts school you go to do business. And you have guys on your roster from California, mm-hmm. Virginia, Arkansas, Illinois, Pennsylvania. I mean, it's not just North Carolina. It's not just Massachusetts kids, although you're still getting that crop. And you have the biggest roster I've ever seen at Babson right now.
Let's get to that in a minute.
This is the biggest roster. Like, this roster is gigantic.
It is.
How did you go about the process of building that?
So a lot of factors. The goal is not to have a roster this big. I think actually we're one of the schools that in our recruiting conversations with families, we don't have an awful lot of good news in that we're actively reducing our roster size. My target is to be at 44, 45. I think it's manageable. It gives it an opportunity for playing time. Facilities can support that. But beside the point there, I think that when I came in, the previous staff had actually assembled terrific teams and had great guys in the pipeline. So let's be honest, part of what I've done is taken advantage of some really good players, some really good students on campus. I think that there were some numbers issues. I want to say the first year I was there, there were 6 graduating in our senior class. The next year, there were 14 or 15 or 16, and the classes were lopsided that way, and they were going to stay lopsided. And when I looked at the numbers and said, let's try and get 10 years out and make a plan here, I think that we understood if we had recruited 6 and then 15 and then 4 and then 19, we'd just be chasing our tail all the time. So to get around that, we brought in 2 bigger classes so we could even out offense, defense, and just positionally have a plan for who we were going to be recruiting in 3 years, in 5 years, in 7 years, in 10 years. So we've got that booked out all the way through. At the same time, I think we have traveled differently for recruiting. Babson's always had a national appeal, but we are, I was in Seattle 3 weeks ago. I've been to the West Coast 2 more times since then. St. Louis, my assistant's been up and down the Mid-Atlantic and the East Coast. We do a lot of traveling. We work hard to find guys, but in not only our efforts, but I think the college's efforts to just really build a terrific school with an international reputation, We are getting inquiries from some guys we haven't maybe previously heard from. And it's because I think we're happy to say we're one of the best schools at what we do, and we want to be one of the best schools at what we do on the lacrosse field.
Yeah, it's interesting because Babson really is, not to just always talk about Clark and always talk about Springfield, but it's a mirror of Clark, which Clark is very much a liberal arts, exactly what you just said, international appeal, all of those sort of things. And Babson is very much business down the road, down the line, ready to go. And I always found that fascinating because even on the field, you could tell that these kids were different than you. you are not like me.
They're different than me. I mean, yeah. Right? It's one of the great things actually working with all these great kids. They're driven. They want to be successful. They came to us for the opportunities that are 20 years down the road and 40 years down the road, not just to come play lacrosse for 4 years.
Right.
Well, I'd like to say that there aren't that many people like Kyle. That's for sure.
Nor like you, Jack.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, quick side point, though, because, I don't want to make this all Babson and all Clark. I grew up in Western Massachusetts. I didn't see lacrosse when I was a kid, even though, I did grow up at a school that had it. It wasn't something I was around. I was a basketball guy. Among the very few schools that I ever went to watch games at were Springfield College. Half hour from my home. It was UMass and Springfield. Those were two important programs. I didn't know that. I just went because someone said, hey, let's go watch a lacrosse game.
Yeah, it's amazing how far the new MAC conference has come. We've talked to a number of coaches from the conference, but that conference is stacked.
Amen.
It's the most competitive conference in New England and maybe NESCACs, but even on a national level, it's become very, very competitive.
Yeah, I would say that when I'm sitting and talking with a player or family, I don't talk a lot about Babson. I think we've already talked more about Babson than I think necessarily is the appeal for lacrosse. The strength that I think we can go to is our strength of schedule. We've worked really hard to give the opportunity for the best players in the country to play the best teams in the country, period. And people want to hear that and say, oh, yeah, we're talking about out of conference. And then I remind them, let's talk about our in conference. And I usually ask a kid, what do you know about the new MAC? And the answer is, they want to say, I know everything. But they realize, I don't know anything. I've actually never heard of it. You guys are in, what is it? And we talk about the new MAC. We talk about Coast Guard. Absolute dudes.
Yeah.
I mean, dudes. Next level, different commitment. We talk about MIT. Arguably the best school in the world at what they do. They can pull kids from any school in the world. Right? And they do. We talk about Clark and what Worcester offers. We talk about Wheaton, and we remind the people of the history that Wheaton has had successfully on the lacrosse field. We can't not talk about Springfield, right? We can't not talk about Clark. We can't not talk about anybody in our conference. And as we go through the story and talk about each school and how unique each school is, I think kids really come aboard and say, wow, this out-of-conference thing's great. Your conference sounds incredible. You have how many schools competing to win this thing? And they're all bizarrely weird and unique. You've got
Emerson.
You want to study film? You get to live in downtown Boston?
Yeah.
Where are you going that's a better opportunity? Maybe somewhere in L.A. I don't know about, but what's the lacrosse look like?
I coached for 2 years at Emerson, and it is the most unique experience that you could ever imagine.
Amen. And if that's what you're looking for, then that's what you're looking for, and it's over. Right? If you're looking for a business degree, we don't compete with MIT and Springfield and Emerson and Clark for that. If someone's looking at us, they're looking at us in the conference. If someone wants to serve the country, right, and I say jump out of helicopters at 5 in the morning, which I don't think they actually do at Coast Guard, but boy, it sounds right.
They drive out and pick the people up to do that.
There you go, right? Yeah. But I mean, that's where you look, right? You want to be in, allied medicine. I mean, what do we call it these days? At Springfield, right? All the different things that Springfield do, it's beyond just being an athletic trainer. It's beyond just being a coach. It's beyond just being a PT, right?
PA program.
I mean, the best of the best. But again, you're looking at that. You're not trying to figure out how can you get a liberal arts degree in Worcester or Clark, how to get a business degree. So we build, our conference really hard when we're talking to people about what we do. And that leads then to conversations about Babson.
I know you're very involved in the recruiting process. And I always ask this question with the coaches. how involved you are and how involved your assistant coach is. But my real question is, I know you just hired Devin Newell, who played at Curry.
Yeah.
He's actually a former player of mine, really good kid. When do you get to the point when you hire an assistant coach that you have the utmost confidence that he's evaluating the players that are right for Babson College?
It's difficult from this standpoint. I think we all learn about our schools. You guys learn about your podcast. We learn about our careers more as you do it. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'm evolving what I know about where I am currently. And I think any assistant who comes in, the same thing. What I look for, and I think what I would imagine anyone worth their salt, what they look for is someone who is going to be hardworking, knowledgeable, is going to care about telling a straight story to a kid and to a family, and who's going to be loyal and invested in the guys that he's coaching, which I think leads to a want and a desire to learn more about the place that you're at.
Yeah, I think, you know, just going back to your roster a little bit and kind of talking about this aspect of recruiting, the ability to pull transfers is now a part of building a team, right? And it's not the only part. I think a lot of people overemphasize.
Yeah.
They got this transfer. This is, you know, we had a coach on here that called his school Transfer U. That's not what Babs says. I'm not trying to say that, but you do have some very impactful transfers from, you know, you have a player from Denison, Colgate, Merrimack that come to you. And how, I just want to ask you, how much has the COVID year, the extra year, impacted the way that you build out this team? And is that why your roster is so huge? So
I'm glad you brought it up, because I didn't talk about roster size when I said, let's talk about that. We have made, in spite of what it looks like on paper, almost no effort to go after transfers.
Right.
You know, it's funny. We sit down when families come in. I had one family ask me in the time I've been at Babson, what's your graduation rate? Well, I mean, someone comes to Babson, they've been pre-screened academically. They want to get a degree. They want to go to work. They graduate.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of conversation about anybody not. What we don't have, with, you know, very few exceptions, is what we think are going to be fifth-year players, right? So the COVID year, even though all of our guys who, you know, before, actually including last year, right, but anyone other than a freshman last year, they've got 2 years of eligibility. In theory, coach, I want to stick around and play more. Our guys are going to have jobs. They're going to go to work. So they're typically not in our plan, in a pipeline, to be here for a fifth year, never mind a sixth year.
Right.
At the same time, we have a very, very small graduate school. So, you know, we've got less than 600. What we're best known for at the grad level is our MBA. And, you know, you've got to be at work for 2, 3, 4 years before you can get into our MBA program. So very few grad kids are coming into our program there. What we've had is guys like Lee Sipes, who you brought up at Merrimack. You know, he won 2 national championships at a D2 program at Merrimack. He called me one day and said, Coach, I'm just looking for different academics. And I said, what does that mean? And he said, well, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to figure out different level of academics. I realize what I want to study. I said, okay, let's talk about that. And he said, I really want to study business. I feel like I could, you know, finance is something I want to do. It's going to take me a long time to get on board. We talked for a long time, the two of us, about why he'd be a great fit for us, why Babson would be a great fit for him academically. He ends up coming in, has been a leader for our team. He's a captain moving forward. He actually wears number 79, which is an important number for us. Has just represented our program incredibly well. But to carry out the academic piece, you know, here's a kid who went and spent extra dozens of hours a week learning his craft, taking classes that are above and beyond what's been asked of him, and now he's managing the Babson Fund, which means he's managing $3 or $4 or $5 million of the school's endowment. This is a kid on campus managing millions of dollars. He landed a job already, done. He said, Coach, I'm coming back for a fifth year because I really want to make sure I get the chance to manage this fund. So I'm taking him as a long example of someone who came because he wanted to change his academic path. He busted his tail to do that. He created opportunities for himself and actually returned as a grad student so that he could take the ultimate opportunity to manage these dollars and go and get a terrific job when he's done. He represents the kind of guy we're looking at to come and transfer in. We get calls now. Hey, I got an extra year. This roster is swollen that I'm on. I didn't know it was going to look like this. We're at 60 guys. What are the opportunities with you? My answer is the opportunities aren't here.
Yeah.
We have a this roster is as big as it can get. We can't get bigger. Okay, that's great, coach. So there's a tryout. You know, the opportunity to walk on really doesn't exist because we don't cut the guys that were recruited.
Right.
For me and for us, I think that's a mistake. Some programs do it. I think they wear it on their sleeve early, mm-hmm. and kids know that that's what they're walking into. Ultra competitive. There might be 70 of us coming out next year. We know that 15 are going to not be here. I might be on that list. That's above board. I think it's a fair way to do it. I'm pretty above board that unless you put on 50 pounds, you're a bad citizen. You're not showing up to do the work you got to do. You got a spot with us. We recruited you. So that said, our roster got bigger because we brought in bigger classes to get ahead positionally, like I was saying, mm-hmm. but also because kids say Babson's just the school I want to be at. They come to campus on their own, and then they knock on the door and say, Coach, I'm here. When's practice start? And you say, well, you got to be better than the guys on the team.
I mean, you have guys, like, we talk about size of sheer number.
Mm-hmm.
How about size of kid?
We want to get off the bus.
Roster, how many kids on your roster are over 6'2"?
You know, I made a mistake. 20? I made a mistake this year, though. I brought in a kid who's almost 6'7". And in my career, I've never had to look up to a kid. Right? I'm about 6'5".
Right.
And all of a sudden, I looked and I said, Riley, and I looked up and I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be a long 4 years, isn't it? I got to watch out. I got to watch out what I'm doing. Listen, lacrosse, as we all know, it's different athletes are playing it, and it's not just take who you get. I think there is a place for the water bug, for the 5'8 kid, for the 6'7 kid, for the 240-pound truck, and for the 160-pound skill player, right? It's all there. I do know that my first year at Babson, we were playing Bowdoin. I had one of the strongest, hardest working, just grinding D-middies, and he tried to take on a 6'4 downhill dodging middie and just got absolutely blown up. And the reason I think I can say it here is he watched that tape with the team probably 500 times, and we all laughed every single time.
Yeah.
But it's always somewhere in my head when I'm looking at a player who's got to play at a physical position in a physical game.
And one of the things that you know, Jack has his question that he asks every coach, but this is a question that I ask every coach is, what to you is the difference between a Division III player and a Division I player?
Not much. Not much at all. I've been in Division I locker rooms, Division I sidelines. I think that one of the clear places that you see it is in depth of an entire roster. The 45th player at a Division I program, the first step is significantly different than the 45th player at most D3 programs. The skill set differentiates, right, for that 45th guy. The top kid on a roster, boy, that first step at a D1 program is inches quicker and maybe longer, right? That skill set comes down to almost nothing. I'd argue if you take a summer league game, you put D1, D2, and D3 kids on the field and say, play ball, you might not be able to get it right on many of them, which is why we get a lot of it wrong when we're sitting there evaluating guys on the sideline.
Yeah.
Right? But I think that in the end, at the true blue chip schools, that 6'2 midfielder has 10 pounds and has a half a first step and
both hands, 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, but again, yeah. you look at any of these top tier D3 programs, it's both hands, 90 miles an hour. It really is, which is why I think you look at all these D3 transfers moving into D1 for their grad years and not only being successful, but being absolute studs.
Yeah.
Right? You look at, guys who played D2 that have moved up to D1 and the same thing. So I think that it's not much, but depth matters. And I think that there is a longer day typically at D1. That we've got to make sure that guys understand the difference between what they're getting into and what they're not. It's only marginally different, but the off season is longer, if that makes sense.
Yep.
It truly goes year-round, and it's truly managed by the coaches and overseen, and I think that piece they've got to get into. But D3 doesn't look like it did when you played.
Right.
We're doing more at Babson, I'd argue, across Division III than what we were doing when I was in college playing D1.
Sure.
Right? When people talked about it's a job at D1, but not at D3, I think we've held on to that phrase. Boy, you tell that to the kids at D3 schools that are giving up everything
Yeah.
Right? Social.
I mean, they're dialing in nutrition and things like that. And I think people don't realize that that is now your life too. You know, just because you're like, oh, I'll just go play D3. Like, you don't make the team now.
Yeah.
You know?
Hands down. I think that we, if you were to look at a BU practice that I was at 5 years ago and you compare that to a Babson practice today, they're the same. We're doing different things, but we're asking the same. We go to the weight room, we're asking the same. And I don't think I'm talking about Babson. I think we're talking about what Coach Cohen's doing. I think we're talking about what Coach Bugby's doing. I think you name the D3 program. You name it. Successful, unsuccessful, going up, going down. Guys are being asked to put in 3, 4, 5 hour days, and that's before they're working on their body. It's before they're seeing the athletic trainer pre-practice and post-practice. It's before they finally get to eat at 10 o'clock at night and then begin doing their academics. And I think we forget that when we talk about, boy, do you want to have a life? Think about D3. Do you want to have no life? Think about D1. I just don't think it's that easy anymore. I think Division 1, you've got to commit to playing your sport, commit to being a good citizen, commit to taking care of business and you know, in the classroom. Division 3, those same commitments are being asked.
Right.
Bring up a good point about eating at 10 o'clock at night. And I think nutrition is such a big part of, you know, having success on the field. And as a coach, you know that more today than you did when you played it.
100%.
At Brown. I mean, you know, nutrition wasn't part of playing lacrosse in the 80s and 90s. You know, you showed up at practice and you practiced and then you went back to the dorm and did a little studying and then you go out and have a few beers and, you know, get ready for the next day. But also you talk about training room. You know, guys have to be in the training room an hour before practice and they have to be in the training room icing down an hour after practice. They got to get their studies in. They got to watch film. As a coach at the level you're at academically, athletically, how do you prepare the freshman class coming in for what's ahead?
Yeah. I think it starts with when we're recruiting, trying to not only nail down who the athlete is, but who the person is. Try and figure out what we can from their high school coaches, from their club coaches, from their friends, from, you know, folks at their school that are not related to lacrosse. We, if we're fortunate, get to have Zoom calls on a regular basis. We get to have visits at home. We get to see the kid play football or basketball or whatever other sports they're playing. The hope is we get to know more about a player before he makes a choice and his family makes a choice where they come to school than we could ever, you know, hope to know. In doing that, I think we pre-screened a little bit someone who we think is going to come to campus and you know, put on the line is not the right word, but put on the line. They're going to opt out of those things that all of the people around them are going to be opting into so that they can put more into our team, into themselves, into our program, and then, in effect, into the school. So, you know, I think it starts with those conversations. Those lead to, I think, that player and his family get to have an opportunity to talk with themselves about what it's really going to take. The better prepared they are before we tell them everything, the better we are. Then it turns into building relationships with our sophomores, juniors, seniors, with each other as freshmen. They get to campus. You know, we don't practice the first couple weeks on campus so they can get their feet wet. So our freshmen come in and we're just meeting with them and talking about the decisions they're making, the classes they're going to, how important it is to meet other people, to get away from lacrosse, to know men, to know women, to know international students, to try and take oddball classes, but to be unique and be interesting. So we start there. If you're playing an instrument, keep playing the instrument, right? Then we get into lacrosse, and all of a sudden, here it is for 4 weeks. We have filmed 20 minutes before practice? What? I've never done that, coach. Yeah, we then have 2-hour practice, and then guess what? A half an hour later, we're lifting for 45 minutes. That, I think, sets the tone pretty quickly for what they're looking at every day.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message. Catch the Sacred Heart University Pioneers on the ice this season. The Pioneers Division I men and women's hockey programs will not disappoint. Season ticket packages and individual tickets are on sale now at sacredheartpioneers.com. And opening in 2023, Sacred Heart University's Martirri Family Arena, a brand new 122,000-square-foot premier skating facility in Fairfield, Connecticut. Learn more at sacredheartpioneers.com.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
What is your plan going forward for the number of players you're bringing in every year?
So our goal right now is bringing 8 to 10 guys a year. And you know, I think that we do know there will be some transfer interest that we can't predict. You know, we don't look at the transfer portal. It's there. I look at it when a kid reaches out to me because I need to find out if he's in it.
Right.
If he's in it, I can talk to him.
Right.
Short of that, it's not where we're going. But we know there might be interest there. We know that there might be one or two grad interest, you know, spots for grad interest. Outside of that, it's 8 to 10. And it's not as easy as this many offensive guys, this many defensive guys. We're trying to make sure we're staying true to filling spots across the board. And I think in going there, 8 to 10 allows us a little bit of room to bump up or bump down to get to 44, 45.
You bring up a good point, because when I'm talking to players, they're like, oh, I haven't heard from the Babson coach or the Bentley coach, and, you know, what's going on here? I go, well, you know, squeaky wheel gets the grease, but you have to understand, you know, they might only be bringing in one attackman this year.
I think that's been the hardest right. part for me across the board. That, you know, as a high school coach, right, longtime high school coach, man, these local guys aren't calling me. The guy I reached out to 12 times, he's not calling me back. What's happening here? Suddenly I'm not getting respected. The kid's not getting respected. This coach is a bum. He's not working hard. I knew I was wrong anytime I said that, but I still wanted to say it. Something felt, you know, validating in it. As a college coach, it really became crystal clear to me. You know, let's help me with the math on this. I'm not a smart guy. Kids grow up and they say, I'm a good athlete, I'm a good player, I'm a good student. I want to go play in the Ivies. Right? I want to go play in the Ivies. I'm an LSM. Let's stick with the LSM analogy.
Sure.
Right? I seem to get a lot of film, a lot of email from LSMs that can get the ball off the carpet, go downhill and score goals.
Can't play defense, but sure.
I'm not going to say that. You did.
I did. So you opened it up.
So, Jack, Ivy League parent, how many Ivy League schools are recruiting kids?
How many Ivy League schools recruiting kids? 7.
There you go. If there's an LSM in every class, you're looking at 7 LSMs across an entire conference. I don't think most of them are looking at 2 in a given year. There might be a year that, Brown's not looking at 1, right? Now you're down to 6. You could be the 15th best LSM in the world, and you don't have a shot.
Very good point.
Right? And, you know, I didn't fully put that together. When now you go through Division I and, you know, you got 45 LSMs being recruited that year. So you're a top 50 LSM. You're a Division I athlete. You got size. You got strength. You got ability. You got IQ. It's just not a spot for you. Right? It's tough. So I think that it's not about coaches aren't calling back. It's about our coaches doing the job saying, we just don't have spots. Another school might be the place that does, right? So 20 years ago as a high school coach, we would tell families, look, you're going to find a home. You want to play lacrosse in college, you're going to find a home. You may have to change what your academic hopes are or targets are or profiles are. You may change the region you might be moving to study in. Right, you might be in a city instead of in the country. You might be in the Midwest instead of the Northeast. if you're willing to make those changes, you likely can still find a home. But boy, it's tough sledding, not only get your foot in the door, but then to be better than the other kid that a coach is looking at, because that coach is trying to find the best of the best of the best.
And there's a lot more to choose from.
Now there are, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, let me just follow up on that. You were saying before that you've been to the West Coast a bunch, yeah. and recently, and part of your recruiting process is going wherever there are great tournaments to see. How do you choose which places you go to?
Trial and error. Trying to read the mistakes we made previous years. Trying to read the strengths and the good decisions that we made previous years. Frankly, I think lacrosse is past the point where, again, I'll keep bringing up, 10, 20 years ago, there were very, very few club opportunities, very few out-of-season opportunities to be playing, and it made sense to be watching high school games purely, but tough to do when you're a lacrosse coach in season.
Right.
Club has created an opportunity for us to see guys now throughout the year all over the place. We are typically, and again, it might just be that we're, whether it's a right or wrong statement, we're a high academic school. So we can't just go and look at any kid on earth and say, great, that's the right target for us. We've got to work through who can get into the school, whose profile matches what we offer. I think every school goes through this. But when we're looking at events, more than anything else, I'm looking at who specifically is going to be there, which gets to, I think, a point you started bringing up that, squeaky wheel and the rest of it. As much as I get, hundreds of emails done on a very regular basis from a kid, hey, I got this GPA, I'm going here, I'll be at this event, we played 11, 1, and 3, and you can't track all of those. In doing that, we begin to build who's interested in us. We begin to build relationships with them, who are we interested in, and I'll travel to Seattle to see one kid play. One kid who's a high target, terrific student, maybe an influencer around his school or his community, but I think for me, anyway, it's much more valuable to be focused, not on trying to find the rare diamond in the rough, because I think that's hard to do these days. I could be in the wrong state on the wrong weekend, right? We could have the wrong eyes on the wrong field while that diamond in the rough is doing his thing, and someone else sees him. So we're aware of that, but I think we try and generate who's most interested in us, who are we interested in, where can we go with that.
So before you go out to Seattle and go watch this player play, he's got to show you that he's very interested in Babson.
To some extent, right? I mean, listen, you guys know how this works. There's, I've never seen a face-off kid lose on film. Ever.
Yeah.
Right? Ever. I got a son who's a junior in high school. He's making me recruit him right now. He's an LSM. He gets the ball off the ground. He goes downhill. In real life, I've seen him miss a lot of dumb shots. Throw a lot of BTBs that you can't throw. Right. You think that shows on his tape?
No.
So he's doing the right thing, and he's doing the right thing that everybody else is doing. But for all of the emails and all the film that we do get, when there's great music, when there's great highlights, when there's great athleticism, when there's great shake, and maybe something we can see that's compete, that kid doesn't have to say, I love your school more than any other school, but somehow he's got to get that tape to me, or I've got to get a hold of that tape, right? So I do think that traveling to Seattle, for example, on a whim, for a kid who's a terrific player, who arguably is a blue-chip kid who's going to look at, the five best schools in the world and the five best lacrosse programs, that's probably a waste of my money and a waste of my time. So if a kid does respond to us and says, I know about your school. My parents are well aware of it. Boy, you've had three kids from out here come over the last 10 years. They're all on some great successful paths right now. I want to talk to you about what you guys do. That might be worth it.
What is the perfect tape that a kid can send to you?
All right.
Perfect tip. Just describe top to bottom.
I'll start with this. For the 4,000 musical choices I've heard, one kid blew me away. He had the Audio 2 top billing. So, I think Jerry Byrne and I could sit and talk for 10 hours about music, old school hip-hop guys somehow. But I heard that stuck with me. I had to call him. I had to talk music with him. We ended up talking lacrosse. He ended up being a terrific prospect for us. Somehow, a player has to put across what his personality is on his tape. And that's hard to do. It doesn't mean go play drums. It doesn't mean tell a story. It doesn't mean we have to hear you. But somehow he's got to get across, not just I can get the ball off the ground, but watch how I can do this and the moments that I can do it in, if that makes sense.
Right.
Right? Are they competitive moments? Are they against, you know, a kid who's already fallen on the ground 10 yards behind you and you're just picking the ball up and you know, doing something with it? That's hard to do. Can you show enough of your shake offensively that you can go left to left? Oh, and left to right. That you can go right to right and, oh, right to left. Right? That you can finish from different places. That you actually throw. Man, I'd love to see a kid throw a great skip pass. Right? A middie who's going down the alley and he understands that the offense is built to be somewhere behind him. And that skip pass on the run with a little fade, a little float, a little bit of touch to go right underneath a shooter so you can just catch it stepping down and finish. I don't care if that shot goes in, but I care about seeing that pass. So, you know, the perfect tape, again, what am I going to tell? A face-off kid lose a few? Like, no.
Yeah.
I mean, no. But show that you have ultimate control of where you're putting the ball to. Hard to do. That's really different than show that you won a weirdly contested, maybe you didn't even, not only did you not win the clamp, but you didn't counter, but the ball kicked the space, you won the ground ball. Yeah, that's a win against a, you know, Bucknell commit, which you guys love to put on there.
Right.
But show me instead, when you win, you got great control and different exits. Does that make sense?
It does, just because I spent all of one weekend with faceoff guys.
Yeah.
And I learned too much.
Well, I'll tell you, I was a high school coach for, what, 20, 25 years. End up calling Coach Poli. He says, come on board, get in there as a volunteer. I'm suddenly at BU, and he says, how do you feel about coaching faceoffs? I feel great, Ryan. Let's, you know, great. I'm all in.
What, do you have Talco?
Oh, my God. I got to learn how to do this. I don't know anything about it. I've been that guy on a high school sideline who says, goalies, go get warmed up. Faceoff guys, take care of yourselves. We're going to play a game, and I hope you're all on fire. Right?
Right.
And Talco had graduated the year before I got there.
Yeah.
You know, I think I did what you did. I called Greg Grenley, and I was like, what do I do? Yep. How do we learn? So why don't you come down to my next thing down here in Westchester County? And, you know, I go down. I sit in the sideline. I watch. And, you know, to their credit, I think they have institutionalized a curriculum that allows kids to learn and progress, judge themselves. It also allows coaches a way to – it's almost a cheat code to learn things that you can work on, focus on, get better with. It also means we look at tape now a little bit differently and say, what are those few things the guy does? Is he protecting it to his left shoulder when he puts it up?
Yeah.
Or does he have zero control of the balls in front of him? He's just faster than a kid who's not as good as him.
Yeah.
So. What's a perfect tape for you guys?
I mean,
I want to learn something here, right?
I'm different. I coach high school.
Yeah.
I'm a JV coach and a varsity assistant at Hopkinton High School.
There's nothing better. There's nothing more exciting.
It's the most fun job I've ever had in my life. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I had kids come up to me this year. They're like, Coach, can you tell me if I'm a D1 player? I'm like, there are zero D1 players on this team. And they're like, what? And like the kids were like legitimately hurt. And I was like, no. I don't think you understand. Like, none of you are big enough. None of you are fast enough. None of you have a stick good enough to be on a D1 roster. But all of you could play D3 if you work hard. And I will help you do that if that's what you want to do. And some of you can play D2 if you work hard, you know? And it's funny because, like, their tone changed because the best player on the team was an All-State player.
Yeah.
And he went to Keene State. That was already in stone before I even got there. And he is the second LSM at Keene State right now. I watched him play in the fall. And the kids are just like, this is the best player in the history of our team. And I'm like, and he's the second LSM at Keene State, guys. Like, this is... You're measuring yourselves on Instagram and against these guys that have highlight tapes and things. Like, what's our highlight tape here? Our highlight tape is we play fast up and down. It's the most fun thing to coach ever. I would never I when I was a college coach, I never coached this way. So it's like so much fun to be a high school coach.
Times have changed, haven't they?
It's so different. It's I mean, we played stall and zone and spokes and. Yeah. All sorts of hybrids and stuff. But as a high school coach, it's just like, we're going to get up and down. We're going to outrun teams. And we're going to jam the ball down their throat. And that's how we win games. And we're fun to watch. It's fun to play at Hopkinton. And that's our brand. And then, for me, to answer your question, having a great tape is something that me as a media person, and even as a person that coaches high school, like, entertain me with the tape. If it's a boring tape... And I've told this story a lot of times. My first job was at Plymouth State. I was the first assistant out of college, right out of Clark. First job. And I had to go through the bad tapes the kids sent, the bad DVDs. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my God. There were kids that just narrated to the camera, dead-eyed, It's not this generation is different. They can all talk to a phone or a camera because they grew up with it. But that generation couldn't do it, and it was so painful. So as long as it's not painful, I'll watch it. And if it's fun, I'll watch it. And to your point, the music can't be terrible.
And it can run the gamut. I mean, you can play anything. Listen, I love a guitar rock that's built into it. And I like when a kid shows me, you know, I got four different tastes of music, and it changes with different phases of my game.
Exactly.
Like, no problem with that.
That's
and cue
great.
It up, cue it up well, right? I mean, and put some effect on it. Now, you can tell the difference in the kid who went and spent $1,000 on a production company.
Right.
At which point I go, this is, come on.
Yeah.
But I also go, wow, this thing's pretty, look at this. Yeah. Right? But you don't have to do all of that. Music is a piece of what your personality is. And, right. and boy, there's nothing wrong with admitting, I like a bunch of different music. I'm going to find a way to put it on there. Don't give a 12-minute tape with 2 minutes of each song, but give me 10 seconds of a funny intro and put on 12 seconds of another. And
your kids make tapes. What do they look like?
Well, I'll tell you, I think that what I've found over the years is your average player sometimes has an average tape.
Yeah.
And your better players have better tapes because they're more committed.
That's my high five right there.
You know, they're committed. So half-ass kids put half-ass tapes together, and then your top players, it's not, you know, perfect science, but that's what I see. Mm-hmm. The other thing I look for in a tape is versatility. As you know, as a college coach, kid goes in as an attackman, but he can run midfield. He becomes a midfielder. That's the only way he can get on the field. Or he's a midi. He becomes a long pole, an LSM. You never know. It happens. You know, my youngest son is an attackman, fourth attackman at Cornell right now. He's on the third midfield line, so I'm man up. He's running midi. That's how he's getting on the field. So you have to have the little things, too. You play defense, you just show, you're a great defenseman, one-on-one. How are you off the ball?
And where's your help? Yeah.
How are you communicating?
And it's hard to show that sometimes.
It's
really
hard.
And
that's why you want to go see
and
him
most
play,
highlight,
too.
And most highlight companies and most people are cropping something up. They're not videoing the defensive end the same way.
Right.
But, you know, hard to see what your off-ball positioning looks like, but I want to see how you approach.
Absolutely.
Right? I want to see how you break down, when you slide. And look, if you're playing defense and you're filming enough games, enough practices, at some point there's an opportunity for you to slide 8, 9, 10 times. You pick out which one or two look like they represent you well. Right? You still have the opportunity to do that. But, you know, Jack, I'm with you. I think that if someone asked me, what do we look for? It's hands and feet. It's hands and feet above anything else. And that tells me that we're trying to identify you spent time with your stick, and maybe it shows you're a basketball player. You know, maybe you got a crossover and a little head shake and some things that go with it, and we can see that. We put a basketball clip on there. I'm happy to see it. But we want to know you've got a stick, you got hands, you got something you can work with, and we want to know that your feet move, which tells us you're an athlete. So,
last question for you. When you're looking at the tape, can you actually tell whether the player has high IQ or not? Because that is a very important part of the game. I think it's the most important part of the game. It's the game.
Jack, I mean, it's a game. So I don't think we do anything different than what you're doing at Hopkinton. I don't think we're doing anything different than what you're teaching. Let's be honest, right?
Right.
We're not different than you look, compare us to any D3, any D1. We play fast. We want to, you know, move the ball. We're hard to the cage. Early offense is good offense. All those things, right? We're good with poles going downhill and D-middies going downhill. And, shoot, I might be good with a goalie going downhill every so often, right?
Yeah.
I didn't say that out loud. But in order to capitalize on what you're trying to create, which is those two-on-ones, those three-on-twos, those short field opportunities, those quick turnovers that turn into something, that's no longer about skill and athleticism. It's about taking advantage of skill and athleticism, and IQ becomes the crux of that, right?
Right, absolutely.
Really hard to see on tape, which is why I'd rather see, instead of a kid just going downhill and just shooting, I need to know if you're an offensive player, if you can shoot on the run, if you can do it righty, if you can do it lefty, right? And I want to know how you got there. Did you shake someone to get to it? Or are you just in the open field going? What's that look like? But what I really want to know is, two-on-one situation, are you making a great decision? And you can lie about it by putting the one clip on there where, yeah, I made a great decision, but usually I don't.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's the gamble, which is why we want to see the high school game. It's why we want to talk to the high school coach. It's why we want to talk to the club coach. Again, if I can watch a kid play basketball or football, which I'm more likely to do because that's out of season for me. I'm happy to drive to Long Island to watch a football game. Happy to go out to Western Mass to watch a basketball game. Right? If we can do that, I think we can start figuring out where IQ fits. But, Jack, if there's a way that a kid can put that on tape, that's what separates D1 from D3. Back to the original question.
Yeah.
That kid's already off the table. I mean,
right?
Really hard to do, but I think it comes down to you play enough and you play enough sports, you probably have some inherent IQ that you can put to use. And if you can find a way to show that, then you want to.
Do you have any two-sport guys at Babson on your roster?
We do. Kid Sammy Kalishman, who came to us from St. Paul's in Maryland, who's playing on the soccer team. He's one of their absolute studs. He's a D-middy for us. Really hard to be a multi-sport collegiate athlete. Mm-hmm. I think typically it's really only going to be a fall and spring thing because there's so much crossover in the middle. We do. We've got another kid who's coming in next year who's hoping to be on the swim team and face off for us. And I'm not sure how that works just from a timing thing. I want to recruit multi-sport kids from high school. I think that the fact that they're competing throughout the year, that they're invested in team, that they're invested in teammates, I think goes a long way for us. And it typically helps someone's lacrosse. But hard to do that in college. If you're not the best player on the team, on both teams, really hard to do.
Right. I guess kind of one last question for me. We talked a lot about how D3 and D1 are similar. I've always been a Division III guy. I love Division III. I think it's the best college experience for 90% of kids that play lacrosse. It has always been my stance. I push it as hard as I can every single chance I get. I'm so grateful to have this podcast to actually be able to do that more often and have this conversation with you. What is the difference between D1 and D3, and what makes D3 great in your mind now that you've coached it for now 4 years?
That is a great question, and it's taken me everywhere from money to D3, let's just say lacrosse specifically. Your program doesn't necessarily take a back seat to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other programs on campus that are the big dogs. And that's a really exciting opportunity for a kid who wants to be an athlete and be a student and have a social life and every so often maybe be one of the big dogs, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that just might mean on the one, you know, at D3 program who's not getting wins, but on the one day that it just felt great, that's what they were. They were the big dog. They were the answer to what was going on campus and in their life and in their teammates' life and in their friends' lives. I think that D3 is often slept on because we just say, do you want to play D1 or D3? And D2 fits somewhere in that mix. But
right.
Lacrosse is that game where some of the best schools in the world have some of the best lacrosse in the world, whether it's D1, 2, or 3. And I think you're going to find a match that's going to work for you. And when it's a Division III match, boy, you can't go wrong. It's exactly what you dream of sending your son to school for, to have the best friends of their life, to be pushed really hard academically, socially, athletically, and to come out, you know, winning, meaning successful, meaning thrilled with their experience. Long answer that's not drilling down to anything specific. I am with you. In my 25 years coaching high school lacrosse, we sent 3 or 4 maybe kids to Division I programs. These were true blue-chip athletes, some of the best players I've ever coached. Boy, all of a sudden you look at, you know, the 50 other guys who went to Amherst, Williams, Middlebury, Bates, Rollins, like you run the gamut of schools, and they're all captains, and they're all studs, and they all remember everything about their high school experience. They loved their college experience, and it was the right match for them, and they never got confused by D1, 2, or 3. They found a school that mattered. Almost all of them went D3. Tells me D3 is a pretty special place.
But I think also, to your point, I think at Division III, obviously you want to win, but I don't think you're judged as an athlete or a lacrosse player in Division III as much as you are at Division I and as a coach. You're not judged on your wins and losses as much as you are as a competitor, as a good teammate, as a building a good culture, because eventually you're going to get your wins and you're going to have some losses. But, you know, I think also playing Division III when you lost, yeah, it was very disappointing, but it wasn't everything.
Yeah, and I'd argue that we're losing some of that. And Jack, I am with you. That's what I think the epitome is. I think it's what we want. I think that's a piece of what you're getting at there.
Yeah.
That there's a different reality, though. And I think ESPN and highlights and, you know, the world's greatest of the world's greatest always saying they're better than someone else has snuck its way in. I think that D3 coaches, though, because let's be honest, you know, you started with D3 life, and it's for me, it's always, you know, hashtag D3 life with everything we do. We're rolling the cages out. We're stringing them up. We're counting how many balls we have.
Painting fields.
You know, we're painting
fields.
Watering
the fields.
So there's a different understanding of this is still just life. Right. And it's still just a piece of what we're all doing, guys. So, you know, at lacrosse, you're not going to go on to make $1 billion at this thing. You've got other things you're trying to get done. We do confuse it a little bit less with, hey, we got a, you know, SportsCenter top 10 highlight coming out of this game here. And instead, we just want to say, how do we create good men and good opportunities and hopefully be good people in someone's life while we're at it? If we can do that, you know, we'll take the wins and the losses and grow from them.
I think one very important thing before we go is for the audience, the academic profile you're looking for at Babson.
I think we're a
GPA.
It's not quite that easy. I'll say if someone's really interested in Babson, one thing that they've got to make sure they've got is rigor in their schedule. And I'd say this for anybody at any school, right? You want to avoid C's. I don't care what school you might end up at, what level you want to play at. You're an easier admit if you're avoiding C's, period, from your freshman year on. And just understand that. You got to challenge yourself. You want to take honors. You want to take APs. At Babson, you want to make sure you got pre-calc somewhere in your schedule. If you're never going to take pre-calc, here goes Kyle. Right?
This guy.
If you're never going to take...
this guy.
And it's not because you're going to take all math courses when you're with us, right? I mean, you can study a lot of things with us, but if you don't take pre-calc, admissions is probably never even going to give you a look. So that's a competition we actually do have. But I think a lot of schools have something like that that makes them unique. Again, I would say this to any kid who's coming up hoping to play college lacrosse. Don't worry about your level. Don't worry about it when you're young. Really don't get obsessed with it in the same way. I think families do now, and I think that everybody's pushing a kid to get something done. Be a good student. Be an interesting person. And it'll all shake out. If you become that athlete who does the extra work, oh, and by the way, does the extra work in a classroom and everywhere else in your life, you become not only more palatable but more admissible from the toughest academic institutions to those that might be a little easier to get into. So that's
one of my best years of my life was when I coached at Brookline High. My first year, we were 0-14. I had to go up against the Bussy Adams. And
been there, done that, you know, Jack.
But I'll tell you, we had so much fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's lost in high school lacrosse today. And it's all about recruiting. Go out and have fun. It's a fun game to play. Because, you know, and control what you can control. See it a million times.
It's a great game to play. And if families were better today at just saying, go play in the park and figure out what you like doing.
Absolutely.
We'd be better off. So, you know, I hope that, you know, this is my last analogy for the day here, right? I used to have guys come to me and say, Coach, you know, I want to try out for the team. What's it going to take? And I said, well, you know, tell me about who you are. I'm a lacrosse player coach. Okay, what does that mean? What do you do? I'm a lacrosse player. I stopped playing every other sport 4 years ago. I'm a lacrosse player. And in my mind, immediately, I said, great. The kid can go left and right. He can do every drill I'm going to ask him to do. He's figured out how to try out and how to showcase. Right. Is he even going to love playing the game?
Right.
And I think that if all of us can just be part of that voice that says, look, when you come visit me or another coach in our office and we say, I don't know how this is going to work out, but I want you to enjoy your experience looking at schools and I want you to find a great place for yourself, then I'm supporting the right thing. And if the parents can jump on board and say, and by the way, you're still thinking about playing JV basketball, go do it.
Absolutely.
We're better off for that.
Yeah.
And I don't care if that's D1, D2, D3, or if it's a club kid or a guy who just wants to just go to school somewhere. Enjoy the game. Lacrosse is as fun as any game you could ever play. We all know that. It's also as depressing and heartbreaking and challenging and all the things that go with that as any sport you can play. I hope that we're able to all be a piece of keeping kids involved in a really great game that's got a history that I wish more kids would look into and learn about. But it's too much fun to make this just recruiting and just pressure and just bad decisions for the sake of highlight tapes.
It's a great place to end it. Thanks again for coming in. Really appreciate it. Make sure to check out Babson this year if you can. We didn't get to it, but they have five NESCAC teams on their schedule. So it's going to be fun. And a stacked conference as well.
I would say a stacked conference, and then you add Endicott, Roger Williams, Union to that mix. We're beyond NUMAC and NESCAC. We got good lacrosse. I would like to think that if you're growing up in the Metro West, if you're growing up anywhere in Eastern Mass, we're one of the great college programs. Come watch play.
Good luck against every team except Clark.
Fair enough.
Well, I think the biggest game on your schedule is versus Springfield College. I just had to get that in there. But,
who's in the playoffs against them, though?
Clark.
That's right.
Lips are sealed, gentlemen. I've learned a long time. Thanks for having me. Really, great a lot of fun.
Thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. All right, that was Rocky Batty. Interesting conversation there.
Very interesting. Obviously a very bright guy, went to Brown. And I see him all over the place, a number of tournaments, recruiting camps, and, you know, it's paying dividends for his team. And like you said, he's got these NESCAC schools now wanting to play him.
It's crazy because, like, why would you want to risk the upset to a Babson? Because, listen, Babson is good. They have a culture there, and, you know, he talked about that a little bit. I think that looking through it as a Clark guy, and you as a Springfield guy, like, they're the team that's coming up in the new MAC, right? Like, they are threatening your school and definitely beating the pants off of my school. So I it was interesting to have him in studio and talk about that dynamic. And also, you know, Babson as a business school, bringing in kids that are very business focused, entrepreneurs, players, and making them into great players, I think was the most interesting part of that.
And the selection process is very unique because of the school's academic history being such a top business school in the country. Not everybody wants to study business, and not everybody wants to play Division III lacrosse. So it's an interesting dynamic in terms of finding that right player to fit the business school and the athletic opportunities Babson Lacrosse offers.
Yeah, and be talented enough to make a difference there, because they are also bringing in some transfers and things like that. So definitely one of the teams to watch in Division III. He also had some great thoughts on recruiting.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, you got to go out and see the players play. You know, film is good. That'll catch the coach's attention. You know, little spark goes off when he sees player doing X, Y, and Z very well on film, but at the end of the day, they want to watch you play.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to get down to the stables and smell the horses.
Absolutely. You're more than welcome to do that.
All right. Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, LaxJournal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.